This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Rolling on into hour number two here of the Nosebleed Nation as it's a Nosebleed Seats takeover here on the G-Bag Nation today, tomorrow, and Friday. Zach Wolchuk alongside Eric Chiafalo, the great Brian Broaddus, and the fantastic Lucius Alexander. Happy to have you, the Turn It On, Leave It On listeners, the Tolos, riding shotgun along with us, 877-881-1053. To join the conversation on the Autoflex Leasing Fan Text. Coming up next, we'll catch up with Mike Fisher. But gentlemen, six NFL pre-training camp predictions, 877-881-1053. Do you agree? And before I get into some of these, off the top of your head, do either of you happen to have a pre-training camp prediction? And if you don't, it's okay. I'm putting you on the spot.
Prediction in what context?
Don't like, ask we're just questions. Gonna change, just like, give who's me gonna, a bleeping who, prediction.
Who's come on. How about this? I don't think they're going to play preseason games.
Okay, now that's a prediction, Eric.
All right, that is.
And Broaddus didn't really have good. To ask a single
Dang,
question.
Can I steal Broaddus's?
Sure.
Yeah, I think
it's probably bad radio if you do that.
I feel like
Eric knows all about bad radio.
Yeah, I'm a savant at awful radio. I would probably say that. And then, like, who's going to be like last year? Who was the standout training camp guy? Wasn't it Xavier Woods?
It was. They created a lot of turnovers last year, if you remember. You know, I think they were first Jeez. In the...
They did. Well, Donovan
like
Wilson,
11,
I think, had six by himself,
yeah,
didn't he?
Exactly. Donovan Wilson was like, I didn't cut this guy. Yeah. Why don't you play him now?
Right.
You know, kind of a thing.
I will say Tony Pollard is the guy that everybody's looking at training camp going, dude, this guy is stupid ridiculous.
He should start over
He's
Zeke. Is that your bold prediction?
Step. Yeah, sure. Let's go on record.
Move
with
over
it.
Zeke. Make a place for Pollard.
Yep.
What do you say? All right, this is from the one and only Jason Lockenfora of CBS Sports. And I think that
I thought he was banned from the G-Bag Nation.
We have mixed feelings on Lockenfora. That's the
Shine. Nine.
Well,
Adam Shine.
When
yeah.
an individual says that the Jacksonville Jaguars are America's team, even though they're about to be London's team,
yeah,
I can understand the banishment.
Mm-hmm.
No question.
And just far too much LA looks, too much product in the hair.
The amount of hair gel.
A lot of gel.
I mean,
gel
he's
in
going
that hair.
Gel and spray. And I don't know that that's allowed in today's climate.
It shouldn't be, and it's definitely not allowed in the G-Bag Nation.
I cannot make fun of anybody's hair.
I think your hair looks great, bro.
Either the lack of it.
Speaking of Brian Broaddus' physicality and sexual aura, we're about 35 minutes away from
nervous.
Just banging with Jared Sandler. The usual baseball stuff.
Lucius is going to judge me.
And we're all going shirtless on the fan cam, so it's going to be super exciting.
I think maybe even Carter might jump into this.
He
mess.
Is. He's on record.
He's giving me the thumbs up right now.
The green light.
I don't think I've ever seen Carter as excited as he is just now.
That's fired up.
Wow,
man.
We got
he
an excited
hates wearing
Carter.
Clothes to work.
All right, so here's the six NFL pre-training camp predictions. Number one happens to revolve around your Dallas Cowboys. And Broaddus, you might like this. Dak Prescott will remain on the franchise tag.
Yeah.
He will not get a long-term deal, and he will play on the franchise tag, which he has signed. And that will be something that the Cowboys then have to wait until next offseason to try and work out again with Dak.
Yeah, I'm not happy about it. You know, I'd like for the Cowboys to at least have that taken care of. But, you know, we've talked about this. It's a subject that, you know, we get into. You're trying to find different angles about it. And, you know, this should have been something that was done last year, and it wasn't. You know, whether that's his side, you know, the Cowboys' side. Yeah, you know, trust me, I've got people out there, you know, driving around listening to us right now that are involved with this, and they're saying, hey, you know, we're a little frustrated by the situation. I think both sides are. You know, Mike Lombardi came on yesterday and said, you know, that Todd France doesn't want to make a bad deal. He doesn't want to have a contract that all of a sudden it's looked at, oh, hey, it's the highest paid, and then next thing you know, two guys just shatter that.
And I had a feeling that you might bring that up, Rodas. Know your teammates, right? I try and know my teammates well. Well, yesterday, right here on the G-Bag Nation, Michael Lombardi, you asked him this, and I thought it was an interesting answer, but put us in the shoes of Jerry and the agent when discussing the Dak deal. Here's Lombardi on G-Bag.
Well, I think the biggest issue is the agent's dealing with Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes, the unknown. He doesn't want to, Todd France doesn't want to get embarrassed. He doesn't want to turn in a deal at $36 million and make him the highest paid quarterback, and then 3 weeks later, Deshaun comes in at 42 and Mahomes comes in at 45. He don't want to do that. He doesn't want to do that. That's how you lose clients in the agent world. Meanwhile, Jerry's worried about what's the cap going to be like next year? Where am I going next year? How should I structure this deal? I don't think Jerry has a problem paying him. And I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's fair to say that they brought Andy Dalton in to challenge him. No, they want to pay him. They want to do 5 years. They're willing to go out with it. They're willing to pay him cash up front. France wants to double dip the market and make it highest average per year. Agents want to make a short term deal and a high average. Owners want a long term deal and they'll pay a high average. So there's got to be somewhere in the middle. But I think the biggest issue here is Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes. Until those deals get done, France can't rest comfortably with the deal he does for Prescott.
Michael, I'm trying to get Jadeveon Clowney, not Jamal Adams. You cool with that, Clowney on the Cowboys?
No. I mean, he'll be standing next to you for most of the games. You know, he'll be standing next to you for most of the game. One thing you can't – he had 3.5 sacks last year for Seattle. You got to be able to get a guy that can play all the time. Now, he's a great player, and he flashes. But as the great soccer coach Alex Ferguson once said,
here he goes.
Don't confuse world-class moments for world-class career.
So you take Adams over Clowney?
I'd never take a box safety over a rusher. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. But Jerry's got other pressing needs to spend his money on. He needs to get Dak signed, and he needs to worry about his cap next year. You know, this ain't the smorgasbord. This ain't Denny's. We're not going through the buffet line and going to eat everything. You got to be pick and choose. And Jerry's got to sign his quarterback and then worry about how he's going to manage his cap next year.
And I think that that's a good point. And that's another reason, speaking of Jamal Adams and the Jets, you know, what we've heard is it's not just the Jets. It seems like all these teams are a little apprehensive right now, Broadus and Eric, to give long-term deals, because right now we were all expecting we're going to have a big rise in the salary cap. Now, because of the risk of, one, does the season get played? And two, well, are we losing the revenue of not having fans in the stands? What does the cap then look like? It makes it tough to get these long-term deals done right now.
Yeah, you know, and that's, you know, all along, though, I look back again, this Dak deal should have been done.
It should have been done.
And you know, I believe it, you know, I know a lot. I know the guys over there negotiate for the Cowboys. It's not like that they didn't try to get things done. And heck, they still might. You know, we've got, 14 more days, you know, for him to, but it just, it gets closer and closer and closer. And I thought, man, this is going to get done. And then now I'm like, I just don't see it, because I just, like Michael said, you know, I see him trying to get to free agency quicker. I really do. You know, I think, okay, if I play on the tag this year and play on the tag next year, you know, are they going to tag me a third time? You know, I just don't see that happening.
Do you think that him signing the tag gave up some leverage? Because I know a lot of people felt that way.
I don't know. There's people that want to, and that's one of the great things. There were a lot smarter folks that did the cap thing than me. You know, when I was grateful working for teams that had guys, because there's certain things that you would say, okay, I understand. And I even asked some cap guys. I didn't ask the Cowboys cap guy because I didn't think they would tell me. But I asked cap guys around the league, and I said, any advantage by doing this? And they were to a man, and one lady said, no advantage. For Dak. And they said, no advantage. I go, any give up? He says, no. They were like, no, there really wasn't. Now, again, the unknown. We don't know what's going to happen with, you know, we want to believe that everything is going to be status quo, but there might be so many things. I mean, with the money and, do you play the season? You know, does he? You know, if he doesn't sign the tag, and all of a sudden they figure out, oh, wait a minute, we're not going to play football now, and he doesn't sign the tag. If he hadn't have, does he get paid once he puts his name? And I hope I'm not speaking out of turn here. I'm sure I am, but as soon as he puts his name on that piece of paper, they owe him $31 million.
Right.
You know, regardless of what happens. So in a way, it could very well be protecting himself if, in case some unknown thing does happen during the season.
Next up of the six NFL pre-training camp predictions is Colin Kaepernick remains unsigned. And we have heard recent traction that more and more teams are interested. I wonder if Cap is still interested. Because now, look, if he signs with a team, are you interested in Colin Kaepernick? Or are you interested in the benefits of selling Colin Kaepernick's jerseys? Oh, right? Because that's motives. Inevitably that's going to, you know, what exactly, what's your reasoning here? What's your justification to actually signing Cap? Because he's clearly been good enough to be on an NFL roster for the last 5 years.
Yeah, I'm interested because my backup quarterback's not worth a damn. That's why I'm interested in Colin Kaepernick. You know, and I think I've been really consistent throughout the years that he hadn't played that I could never understand why somebody wouldn't work him out. And I'm sure there's personnel guys around the league that would say, yeah, we'd love to work this guy out, but ownership's telling us not to work him out. You know, I go back to ownership when I was in Philadelphia. Jeff Lurie told us, I'm not comfortable with Randy Moss on our board. Okay, Mr. Lurie, you're the owner. We take Randy Moss off the board. I'm sure there are personnel guys that wanted to work out Colin Kaepernick and potentially sign him. And then everything kind of broke loose where we talked about the lawsuits and things like that. It's like, okay, we can't touch this guy now. So if you're a team that has a bad backup quarterback and now we're dealing with a pandemic and your starting quarterback could get sick and you're playing with I would rather take my chances with Colin Kaepernick than I would some guy that I know can't play.
Logan Woodside?
Yeah.
The backup quarterback to Ryan Tannehill in Tennessee?
Yeah, something like that. Don't at least give me a chance, you know? And I don't think if you sign Colin Kaepernick, it's about jersey. I just want Colin Kaepernick to get a fair workout. That's all I want.
Sure.
NFL guys will do the workout the right way if they have the ability from their ownership to do it the right way. They will put him through an extensive workout that they can measure where he's at. And until then, you know, this is all just a big smoke and mirrors thing. You know, bunch of crap is what it is.
Yeah, I don't think a team's actually going to sign him. It's very easy. Anthony Lynn, head coach of the Chargers, comes out. Yeah, like he's certainly an option for us, but we haven't done anything in the way of like actually reaching out to him or scheduling anything.
Then you get fired, Anthony Lynn. I mean, and I know they drafted a first round quarterback. You know, I get it. They at least did something about their quarterback situation. But some of these other teams, nah.
I just also wonder if they don't want you're going to get a pat on the back by a lot of the nation when you sign Colin Kaepernick. Now, you will have people questioning the motives. Why did you do this?
He made your team better. That's all you need to know. You know, it's just, you could say the same thing about Cam Newton. You know, why did more people take, what, the Chicago Bears?
You really want Nick Foles over Cam Newton?
Yeah, Cam Newton, think about what it cost Cam Newton to go get him. The Bears had to give up a pick and $17 million for that guy?
The Bears are a great case study on how not to
build a team.
Just how not to address the quarterback position.
No, historically. They've always been mad at quarterback.
They pass on Mahomes and Watson. Supposedly, they don't even really do anything in the way of due diligence on Watson, according to Watson himself. They give up draft picks and still have to pay a boatload of money to Nick Foles. It is garbage. But my thing with Kaepernick, though, is you get the pat on the back for signing him, but then now you're getting the daily pressure of, well, okay, are you going to play him? Why isn't he going to be on the field? As soon as your quarterback has a bad game, why isn't Colin Kaepernick here?
You have to live with that anyway. Your objective is to win games. If you're playing a quarterback that's getting you beat every week and you continue to play that quarterback and you have a better quarterback on the bench, then you deserve to be doing radio with me.
And heck, we just saw it with Andy Dalton being signed. You had fans that were saying Andy Dalton should be playing over Dak Prescott. It just comes with any kind of proven commodity that's going to be your backup. That comes with the territory.
But then it also, when it comes full circle and you inevitably have to cut the guy for whatever reason, now, why are you? I think it's a headache that most people just don't want. And I would rather just play my crappy backup and suck and go draft a guy in an era of great quarterbacks coming out all over the place. Every time I turn around, there's a new young stud quarterback. And it's like, why get the headache of dealing with all the hoopla and the media and the quote-unquote distraction of a guy like Colin Kaepernick as a celebrity backup quarterback? I just don't think these teams want the headache. And to be honest with you, I understand it.
Hey, you know what? When you start to think about, do you want the headache or not? And you're starting to, it sounds like to me you're listening to the fans the way you're running your team. Are you worried about? Are you worried about
I'm
pressure?
I'm trying to put together
are you
the best
about,
team
Are
possible.
You worried about Joe and Flower Mound ripping you for playing for not playing a guy?
Shout out to you, Joe.
Yeah.
I would just ask you. You've been in these organizations. Is that how teams do it?
Oh, I'm just asked you. No. You just made a very bold statement that you don't want anything to do with the celebrity quarterback. Are you running?
Isn't that the statement the league has made this whole time
running,
by not
are
signing
Are you
him?
Running your team in a manner where you're listening to the fans? Are you running the team yourself? Are you listening to what the – are you worried about fan reaction?
Well, again, it's not the fans' headache. It's my headache.
Because I've been in that situation like you talked about. And the minute that you start believing what the fans are saying – and some fans are absolutely right. And trust me, I've drove to work daily listening to radio people be right about what's wrong with our team.
Well, and heck, I never thought
but I
that
don't,
I'd...
But I don't run my team that way.
In Philadelphia,
I run
they
my
got
team.
The backlash.
If I'm running a team, I want to avoid aggravation at every turn possible.
Your
and
aggravation
I don't think
or the fans' aggravation?
The fans' aggravation becomes my aggravation.
See, I don't think you can run your team that way.
Is Colin Kaepernick winning you a Super Bowl? Yes or no?
Is Colin Kaepernick
Probably
winning?
He's gone to
is
one.
Is he going
to
give
his quarterback the team to a Super Bowl?
Are you going to go win 8 games with Colin Kaepernick, and I could go win 8 games with any other guy that is not going to
Dak
surround
Prescott,
the, all the
games?
Media circus?
If I'm the Steelers, I'd much rather have
How
Colin Kaepernick than Duck Hodges
really,
if Ben gets hurt again.
Do you really think it's a media circus with him? I mean,
what?
Do you really believe that?
Rodis, of course I do.
Every week you're going to deal with a media circus? Every week?
I think it will yes. be at first, but it will turn. It
you
will fade as the
fade.
Season goes
Michael
on.
Sam, yeah,
every
Michael Sam
only
was a,
ramps up more.
Michael Sam was a gay player in the NFL.
For
the
5 seconds.
He was on the practice squad for 6-7 weeks. Do you think there was
practice
a
practice squad defensive lineman?
Had
We're
a chance,
talking about
had a chance. Had a chance every week. Every week to go up and interview him, talk to him if you wanted to. See, that I disagree with you, Beth. I think initially you're going to have to answer some questions.
I do too.
But I think if he is a backup quarterback, he doesn't have to be out there every day out front and center like your starting quarterback. He doesn't. They don't have to make him available every single day.
It will be a big deal at first, but I do think
My job
a month
is to
after
win
the
games.
Signing, I don't think it'll be as big of a deal.
Yeah.
Okay. I disagree, but that's totally
that's
fine.
That's good.
We can get back into that a little bit later. Let's get back on time. Coming up next, we got our dual insider, Cowboys and Mavericks insider, Mike Fisher for a Fish Report next on The Fan.
Mike Fisher set to join us here in the Nosebleed Nation, Nosebleed Seats G-Bag Takeover. Great to have you in with us, 877-881-1053 to join the conversation. Up next, we'll do a little baseball stuff. Just banging with Jared Sandler. The shirts will go flying off on 1053thefan.com/fancam. And, of course, the segment brought to you by America Can Cars for Kids and Frankel & Frankel. Have you been injured in an accident with a work truck or an 18-wheeler? Call 214-333-3333 or go to frankelfirm.com, Principal Office, Dallas, Texas. And now we welcome in Mike Fisher to join the conversation. Fish, lots of NFL, lots of NBA. I know Rick Carlisle spoke today. What do you think? What's the big headline right now?
Yeah, let's do a Cowboy and let's do a Mavericks. And by the way, Nosebleed Nation is pretty clever.
Yeah,
pretty clever.
Appreciate it from the Tolos.
Everybody,
absolutely.
Yeah,
is that a team decision?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm reflecting on the what Bill Belichick has done in New England. And Stephen Jones, the Cowboys COO, was on 105 Through the Fan not too long ago and talked about how the Cowboys are going to borrow a page from Belichick. And, of course, Brian, what he's talking about specifically is being multiple and versatile on defense, right?
Correct.
So, you know, we've got two defensive tackles here who, you know, do have traditional role types in a four-man front, which McCarthy says this is going to be. But, you know, could Dontari Poe play the nose in a three-man front? Of course he could. Can Gerald McCoy do multiple things, even though he's a big body? At the same time, having lost 20 pounds, sure he could. Can you move Tank Lawrence in different spots, Tyrone Crawford, on and on? But what's so beautiful, and remember when we went, was it last year we went to New England, Brian? Yeah, last year. And you're watching. I know you watch it on film, and I watch it on person. In person, they look different on defense. Like every set of downs, they look different. They have different personnel. They're positioned differently. They're moving guys around. So my first question for you, Brian, as a football guy, is that hard to learn for a football team? Is it hard to orchestrate?
No, it's not hard. But the reason why the Patriots are really good at it is they take veteran players that have high football IQs, and they're able to make it work that way. They're very difficult to get a read on, because when you give a scouting report on them, you say, well, this is what they do, and then they actually don't do anything you said they're going to do in your scouting report. So they're a very, very difficult team to prepare for that way. But, yeah, high IQ defensive players that understand multiple positions, understand multiple schemes, and adapt as they go along in the game.
Okay, because we talk all the time about, you know, a team's going to play a 3-4 defense this week. Well, that's good for us because we play a 3-4, so we practice against it all the time.
Right.
That kind of advantage. Well, you don't have that against the Patriots. You don't know what they are until they show up on Sunday. And then in the second quarter, their defense is different than it was in the first quarter. So that's the first page to borrow from. And, Brian, I assume you agree the Cowboys under Mike McCarthy in part here, Will McClay too, they have assembled some of those kind of guys. Would you buy that?
I would think they do have some high IQ guys, though. I'd like to see them practice. So that's something we talked about in the open, that I'd like to see how they're going to use Alden Smith and some of these guys, body types and things.
I would
like to see them. Now, maybe in training camp they would be able to show me all the different things that they're going to do. But, right now it's kind of hard. I could say, yes, I guess they're going to be multiple, but they might just fall back into something. If they're not being very good at being multiple, they might just go back to – and I think that happened to this group last year. You know, there were some things they wanted to try and couldn't do it because the players were incapable of doing it.
And then the coaches fell back.
Coaches will always fall back to what they know.
Yeah, that's right. They fell back to the comfortable.
Yes.
Okay, so let's try to borrow that. That sounds good. But you know what the Cowboys should really borrow from Bill Belichick and the Patriots?
What's that?
Cheating.
Well, they get a slap in the wrist every time they get caught.
And that's kind of what I'm saying. Now, if you're a dad in the car and you're taking your son to baseball practice, or you're picking him up from swim practice, or your daughter's going to volleyball or whatever, you know, maybe you need to do earmuffs on them. But there's some degree of cheating in sports. Some of it's legal. Some of it's we just smile at it. Some of it's accepted. Some of it's not. But there are degrees, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. It's gamesmanship. And, you know, I mean, when I used to go on the road as a pro personnel guy, I would try and steal the other team's signals is what I would try and do. I would sit in the press box with my binoculars and not even watch the play. I would watch the sidelines and then try and get the personnel group to match the signal that I saw.
Okay. Is that illegal?
No, not at all.
Did you feel guilty?
Not at all.
Okay. How about when you're a young man or your son's playing and he tries to stretch a single into a double and he slides into second and they tag him and they clearly got him out, but the umpire calls him safe. Does young Broadus stand up and tell the umpire, no, sir, you got it wrong, and trot back to the dugout?
No,
I saw that I saw that commercial. We've all seen the commercial in basketball where the kid says, no, it was out on me, and the whole team's like, what?
Yeah.
I don't want to be that guy.
Okay, I don't know what church that was, but that's not a church on my planet, and I'm all for church. But that's not how sports is done.
Yeah, I think there's things that you can do manipulating the rules. I think if you're talking about deflating footballs and things like that, that's probably taking it a step too far. But I think you're always looking for some type of advantage. And I'm the guy that always talks about, I would love to know what the Astros were thinking. You know, I really would. I'd love to sit down with those guys, buy them dinner, and say, hey, when you guys were kind of planning this out, what were you thinking about? You know,
yeah, me too.
I'd love to know, and I'd love to know I'd love to know what Ernie Adams and those guys do at New England. You know, I can never get Lombardi to tell me what they were doing, but
I think we can guess at part of Belichick's thinking, which is, and Mr. Kraft's thinking, if all you're going to do is penalize me $1 million and a third round draft pick, and in exchange I go to the playoffs, I'd make that trade every time. And so I find it problematic, I guess, that the NFL doesn't really crack down. What was the penalty for deflating the balls again?
Oh, man.
Brady got suspended for four games.
Yeah, he got a four-game suspension.
Okay, yeah. And so you're
I think they lost draft picks there too.
I think they might have lost a first round.
First round pick, yeah.
Okay, that one counts. But they had they just gone to the Super Bowl?
Well, yeah, picking 30, yeah. Whatever, yeah.
32nd pick.
Well, I guess I'm even going to live with that. So I wonder why there isn't more institutionalized cheating in the NFL, knowing that we're copying everything else from the Patriots, including their defensive philosophies. Why aren't we copying this, and why aren't we justifying it the same way Brian just did? Oh, you know, Brian and I play golf. I don't really cheat, but sometimes my foot nudges against the ball when it's in the rough, when I could notch just a little bit.
Yeah, but
but
that type of cheating, you know, I'm looking for advantages. I'm not looking, again, it's manipulation is what you're talking about, kicking the ball. If you and I are playing for money and I see you kicking the ball, I'm going to beat your ass on the course.
There you go.
If we're playing for money, you know what I'm saying? So, I don't need that. But if I'm trying to steal your signals, if I'm trying to dig through your trash cans and find if you've thrown away game plans and stuff like that, I'm trying to do things like that. I'm not listening in on your headsets or anything like that. But, okay, you know, if I'm sitting in the booth next to you and I could hear what you're saying, you know, let's do stuff like that.
But the Patriots are listening in on your headsets.
Sure. They haven't proven that. They haven't proven
correct.
That.
You're making an
assertion that's happening.
For the sake of this trial, let's presume guilt. Why don't we do it too? Brian, if he's listening to your headset, why don't you plug into his?
I don't know if they're listening to my headset, Michael. That's what I'm saying. I don't know that you're making that, you know, they might be in the box next to you and can hear what you're saying just through the walls of the box.
Yeah.
With a cup against, next to, they have a cup against.
Sure.
The wall on their
but yeah, I mean, I'm just talking about ways of taking advantage of situations. You know, if you could steal signs, that to me is a great way of understanding what's going on.
There's some boundary that most of us, Brian, I think this is what you're kind of saying. There's some boundary that most of us we don't cross.
Yeah, like I said, I'm not kicking the ball in the fairway when we're playing money.
We saw a good example of Vrabel in the playoffs, right? He took a page out of the Belichick book.
Sure.
They bent the rules
on
a little
bit. On the clock.
Absolutely.
Can we agree that if you were playing, if a bunch of us went out and played Bill Belichick in golf for money, he'd be the one to kick the ball?
I don't think he's going to kick the ball.
Okay.
I don't think I don't think he's kicking the ball. I don't think he's going to kick the ball.
Okay, to the Mavericks. And, yeah, this was the first day of the reboot training camp, and so we had a nice visit not only with Donnie Nelson but with Rick Carlisle too. I think one of the things that jumped out, they are doing a good job at trying to paint this and not as, boy, this is going to be tough or this is going to be weird. This is an opportunity. And I must say, in Rick Carlisle's history, he does thrive in these positions. He does thrive when, I don't know what they're going to do now. That's when he does just fine. J.J. Barea, Deshaun Stevenson, and Jason Terry, all good examples of that in the Mavericks NBA championship season, and on and on and on. So they're doing a good job with that. They're talking about maybe needing help when it gets too down to a third center. But I must say, and I didn't say this in the press conference, I just shut up and scribbled, but the idea that Boban can't be a useful third center, I know there's some teams that it's not going to work against, but look at the other rosters in the West. Who else has a third center? Nobody has a third traditional 7-foot center.
No.
So I don't view that as a Mavericks weakness or, we're going to have to go small ball. And I hope they don't. They talked about Seth Curry and Dorian Finney-Smith being the other two members of the starting five, obviously along with Doncic, Hardaway, and it's Kristaps Porzingis. And then you look at Maxi Kleba's numbers. And Maxi Kleba and Kristaps Porzingis, in terms of guys who block shots and make three-pointers, they're like two of the four best in the league, and therefore maybe they don't play as well together as Maxi would play behind him. So Maxi's your number two center. Porzingis is your number one center. They aren't still able in their work today. They're still not doing team stuff. It's still one-on-one. They're not even playing one-on-one against each other. It's, I should say, one with one. It's two guys now get to be at one basket at the same time. And the players are shooting and getting ready, and all the staffers are wearing their masks at practice. as they try to ramp up to a July 8th trip down to Orlando. And Donnie made an interesting comment, and he's very colorful in these analogies, and he said, it's going to be like a sailor's life. And you think about it, and what he means is a sailor in like 1860, where you're going to get on the boat, you're going to cross the ocean, and you don't quite know where you're going to end up. And so for the Dallas Mavericks and the rest of these players in the NBA, a sailor's life. It is.
Mike, we didn't hear in it ourselves. We didn't hear and you were there. Did they say anything about the overall health of the team? Did they talk about their tests? Did they give you a number of tests? Did they tell you, the overall health of how they're looking right now?
Good question from journalist Broda. Yeah. first of all, Carlisle has been back in the gym for 7 days, and he's had 5 COVID tests.
Okay.
So that's number one. They're taking that very seriously. Two, no players to report at this time have contracted COVID-19, that according to Donnie Nelson, of course, we'll monitor. And then he did say that, you know, Dwight Powell is doing some things in the gym, Jalen Brunson doing some things too, but along with Courtney Lee, those three guys will travel but will not play. They are considered out for the rest of the season. Trey Burke, the backup point guard that they're signing, did finally sign today and should be at practice tomorrow. And otherwise, yeah, except for those three guys, they are a fully loaded, health-wise, Mavericks team. And I think, guys, as a 7th overall seed, as we approach the unknown and a sailor's life, I think the Mavericks can have some fun at 7. And I think it starts with beating Houston in game 1.
Heck yes, let's go.
Right. Dang right, Fish. We appreciate it, bro. We'll catch up with you tomorrow.
Thanks, Nosebleed Nation.
Appreciate you Fish.
Very welcome, Fish. At Fish Sports on Twitter every day here in the G-Bag Nation at 320. 877-881-1053 to join the conversation. And coming up next, all eyes on 1053thefan.com /fancam. We got Jared Sandler, our Rangers insider. Let's do some baseball stuff, just banging combo. Shirts go flying off. That's next right here on The Fan.
If you are not already, I encourage you, go to 1053thefan.com/fancam. It's a moment in G-Bag Nation history.
Those piercings, bro.
And it's going down right now. It's 340-ish. Shirts are off, and it's time for this. Oh, yes. For those that aren't familiar,
Speed Demon.
At 840-ish, every night on the nosebleed seats, we do Just Banging with Jared Sandler, our Rangers insider, and the G-Bag Nation does baseball stuff at 340. So I figured it is the Nosebleeds Nation. Let's go ahead and mix and match, and right now we're joined by the one and only Jared Sandler on your home of Texas Rangers baseball. Jared, players have reported, and this is a historic moment, my friend.
Listen, some afternoon delight with the Nosebleed Nation. Yes. Is that what we're calling it?
That's what we're rocking with, the Nosebleed Nation.
Yeah.
Okay, I like it. Broadus, Zach, Eric, I think Carter's somewhere in the background, and of course Lucius, who just, I mean, he completes the circle here. I don't know if he's participating.
He's not participating right now.
Okay, he's Lucius, holding out. He's holding out for more money.
Lucius doesn't want to shame us all.
Yeah.
But, there we go.
My man. That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about.
Lucius, let me borrow that for the segment,
man. Thanks,
I didn't even have to pay for his OnlyFans.
Lucius, what a dish.
That's awesome. Hey, guys, first of all, shout out to Chris Arnold. Yeah. We are all well aware of Chris's incredible resume and super excited for him to get inducted into the Hall of Fame. Awesome teammate. Honestly, one of the nicest guys you probably ever meet. So shout out to Chris Arnold.
We're well aware of that, Jared. Thank you.
Indeed. I wish that, like, if there were, you know, in Cooperstown, in Canton, and in Toronto, in Springfield, they have, like, items, right? It would be cool if my argument with Chris was, like, a part of his Hall of Fame space.
It should be.
That was a I think I was at a wedding when that happened.
No, you were. In fact, I was filling in for you, and I was doing pre and post, and you still said, no, I'll do the mix. And I'm glad that you did, because we got classic drops and one of the best on-air arguments in fan history.
I am well aware, Chris.
Thanks.
I am well aware.
Jared, before we get into some other just random baseball topics, I do want to ask you if there's anything Rangers-related to get into off the top. Players have reported today. Last night, for those that missed it, we went through some of the big, you know, roster announcements, and I think one of the ones that caught our eye was Nick Solak being listed as an outfielder. So I assume that means the Rangers liked what they saw earlier in spring training to now in summer training say, hey, Nick, we're going to put you at maybe center field.
So, you know, he came with some outfield experience, but not in center. And He got a little, I don't remember if it was three or four games worth of center field action in Arizona and actually looked really comfortable. Now, I don't know that he'll ever have an ideal center fielder's arm, but if you ask people, would you rather sacrifice the range or the arm in center, they'll tell you the arm. And he definitely has the tools from a speed standpoint to cover ground there. And the reason why this is interesting, first of all, putting him as an outfielder on the roster means nothing. I mean, it's eyebrow raising, but it's not like it's not a commitment. I mean, they can do whatever they want with him. But we're talking a lot about first base, and if Ronald Guzman and Greg Bird continue to struggle or not provide enough confidence that they can be the guy there, one way to get all the bats in the lineup is by putting Nick Solak in center and Danny Santana at first base. And so I don't know if that's the favorite in the clubhouse right now, but I definitely think that is, you know, as we consider ways to get that ideal lineup in there from day one, offensively, that's it. And if this were a 162-game season, then I don't think you rush to do that and you just say, hey, let's see if one of the first basemen when the regular season rolls around can get it going, because we know that spring training performance doesn't really guarantee anything good, bad, or indifferent. The difference here, though, is you don't have 162 games to say, hey, for the first few weeks, we're going to give each of these guys 4 to 5 starts and we're going to platoon them. You can't be that patient if you're trying for a playoff spot, and so that's why they might do that right from the start if they aren't really sure about Guzman or Greg Bird.
Jared, let me ask you this, though. This might seem like a strange question to maybe ask about mental makeup, but I would like to think that maybe if you're a guy that has a lot of gloves in your bag and you're a young guy, is there pressure on him to say, hey, just – you know, let me settle in one spot. Let me kind of get myself established. And then if you want to move me around and do some things, you know. But really, as a young guy, is this the right approach for him? And does he have the mental makeup to be able to have to maybe play a lot of different spots and kind of keep his bat in that lineup?
So to that question, I'd say that I think he does. He's a high IQ guy. He's very calm. And it never seems like the moment is too big for him. Even his major league debut is kind of like, yeah, I mean, it is what it is. As far as playing one position, so we've had a lot of these conversations with Joey Gallo. Here where the differences are. One, Joey Gallo has the ability to be a real impact defensive player. His arm is unbelievable. And his athleticism plays well in the outfield, and it could have certainly at first base. With Nick Solak, I don't know if he has that sort of upside defensively. And I think with Gallo, it was never a question of if he was going to be in the lineup. It was just a matter of where and how. Whereas with Solak, you're not going to sit Gallo. You know, I don't think you're going to sit Santana right off the bat. And you're not going to sit Calhoun, and it's tough to sit Chu because, honestly, Chu's maybe been your second or third best offensive player the last couple years. And so that's where the difference is with Solak is the question is actually how are you going to get him in the lineup, whereas with Gallo, that question never really existed, and that's why some people felt like earlier on they should have just stuck with one position, which is what they're trying to do now with him in right field.
Jared Sandler with us here on The Fan. Jared, earlier today, Baskey with KNC was making the point that if a pitcher goes down with COVID and he has to quarantine and basically not touch a baseball for upwards of 2 weeks, that his season might just be done at that point. Where do you stand on that?
So I definitely think it's possible, but I'd say that if you get it and you're asymptomatic, I don't know why you couldn't throw. And you might not be throwing with a teammate. You might not be thrown at the facility, but these guys, and certainly like if it's Corey Kluber, the Rangers will make sure that he's got the resources to throw and to keep his arm in game shape. And in which case, if he's out for 2 weeks, I mean, you know, that wouldn't require rehab starts or anything like that. I think the question becomes if these players are not asymptomatic and, you know, they're relegated to a bed for a week or, you know, whatever the conditions are, that's when I think it could get tricky. But if you get COVID and you don't have symptoms, especially in the first month of the season, I don't think that it knocks you out for the rest of the year by any means.
Jared, I'd like to get into the bullpen with you. And I know in talking with you previously, you've always said the bullpen might be the easiest thing to address throughout the season. But given the case that this is now a shortened 60-game run and the Rangers might have some uncertainty, I mean, look, Jose Leclerc's a bit of a wild card, right? We're optimistic and we're thinking, okay, can he maybe get back to the closer that he was? But he's really been up and down, and we don't know what to expect out of him. So how do you assess the Rangers' bullpen as they get ready for the shortened season?
Yeah, big question mark. And you're right. I think over a typical season, it is the easiest unit to improve. But I just don't know what sort of player movement we'll have team to team this year. And on top of that, no minor league season, just the way rosters are constructed, I'd still say it's the easiest part of your team to upgrade, because all parts of the team are probably going to be difficult to upgrade when you're looking for external help. But I think it is going to be a challenge. And this is a question for the Rangers, and it starts with Jose Leclerc. 2 years ago, he was one of the five best relievers in all of baseball. Last year, he was very inconsistent, and you know, I think it's an easy question to ask when someone's not doing well, or are they tipping their pitches? It's almost like a cop-out answer when the reality is no, you just were getting your tush kicked. But the way guys were responding to his pitches, it was either he was way more predictable or he was tipping, because those wild-ass swings that he used to generate, he wasn't. Hitters looked way too comfortable. So we'll see what adjustments he makes. You know, I think Nick Goody is going to be a big X factor for the Rangers if he can be lethal out of the setup role. You know, one of the things Bassick was talking about earlier, and he's spot on with this, because of a 60-game season, you're going to see more relievers maybe work three games in a row. You're going to see managers likely a little more aggressive with their relievers because they don't have to worry about preservation over 162 games. And so how good is the top end of your bullpen? And I'm not sure where the Rangers stack up, because last year Rafael Montero was really good, but it's 1 year, and we know that relievers are so volatile. I don't know what to expect out of him. Jonathan Hernandez throws a 100-mile-an-hour sinker. I think he can be good, but I can't say for sure. So the bullpen is going to be a question, and I'd imagine the Rangers are going to have at least one pitcher who doesn't make the team for opening day who ends up impacting their bullpen. Maybe it's a guy like Alex Spies, maybe a guy like DeMarcus Evans, because they have some depth. I'm not sure the top end of what they're working with in the bullpen.
Jared, I'm going to ask you a question and I'm just curious, which group will have an advantage when you talk about the managers, like the way they need to manage, the American League managers or the National League managers?
Ooh, here's what I would say to that. Obviously, the AL rules, which is what we're having, require less comfort and strategy with the NL side and double switches. And so I definitely would say the NL managers if the rules were reversed. I think the managers and the coaching staffs, and I'd even say the front offices who are progressive and creative, are the ones that will have an advantage, because there's no book for this. There's no book for the strategies, both in-game and long-term throughout the course of the season. And so it's tough to be a copycat. You know, we always talk about sports having the copycat element. Well, there's no way to execute that because it hasn't really been done. And I think, you know, you're going to see teams like Tampa Bay's always been out of the forefront of these things. I'm really curious to see what strategies they employ. So those are if that makes sense, I know that's not a direct answer to your question. I just think that the teams that end up performing the best outside of like the super talented teams like the Yankees and the Dodgers are the teams who might end up winning the strategery battle and the creativity battle and how to take advantage of the 60-game season and the various rules that are in place.
Jared, you're the best, man. Thank you so much for helping us make this historical moment on the 105.3 The Fan Fan Cam.
Hey, let's be shirtless again tomorrow, guys.
Hey, yes. Let's do it. 3:40 tomorrow, you'll be able to get another dose of Just Banging with the Nosebleed Seats on the Nosebleed Nation here with Jared Sandler. Coming up next, though, let's talk a little Dallas Mavericks basketball, as we've got five key points to the Mavs schedule for the NBA restart. And I have the Dallas Mavericks player of the 2010s who was their best. I don't think it's a surprise, but it brought up the question, who's the second best player from the Mavericks in the 2010s? 877-881-1053. We'll do it next on The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.